The man steadied himself as he approached the microphone. He played many gigs in the past decade and a half of his music career, but none quite as raucous as this one. The room echoed with the hoots and hollers of 1,000 convicts, all vying to be the one to be heard, to be noticed. The perimeter of the room was lined with armed guards, all ready to intervene if things got out of hand. This didn't intimidate the man. He'd played in front of many a captive audience. But this one was special. This place was an hour and a half drive northeast of Sacramento and went by the name of Folsom, the same name found in the opening song title on his set. As he gave a nod to the drummer to set the beat for the song, he introduced himself to rapturous applause.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cage.
Virtuous Men, a podcast devoted to sharing the lives of men of history, fiction, and today, and the virtues they personify. In this season, we will explore six crucial virtues of life and tell two different stories for each virtue. Though each story is very different from the other, we will come to understand the truth that the same virtue is often attained through different paths. Welcome to Episode 2, The Redemption of Johnny Cash. A virtue is a behavior one conforms to in order to achieve a moral and ethically principled life through action. A virtuous man is one who is well aware of how he falls short, yet chooses not to allow his flaws to define him as he seeks to better himself. Such men show that it is possible to overcome the things that keep us from achieving our destinies. Though each man is flawed and imperfect, it is in the lives of flawed men that we see the possibility for virtue in our own lives. This episode's virtue is redemption. Redemption is the act of being brought back from a path of destruction and set on the path of freedom and righteousness. It is a critical piece of anyone's story who seeks to pursue virtue and live to their full potential. Redemption can often take on a religious meaning, as in one being saved or redeemed from his sins. It is true that it is only when one sins, and the wages of those sins, are fully realized that redemption can become possible. One of American pop culture's most vivid examples of redemption is in the life of legendary country music star Johnny Cash. In this episode, we will tell the story of his poverty-stricken childhood, his journey to stardom, and his eventual descent down the road of addiction. We will also tell the story of his rise from the depths of despair to become a voice for, as he put it, the beaten down. And we will explore how his story of redemption can also be an example for our own.
Born in Kingsland, Arkansas, in February of 1932, J.R., Johnny's given name, was the fourth of seven children to poor sharecroppers Ray and Carrie Cash. When J.R. was three, his large family moved to Dyess, Arkansas, to take advantage of one of President Roosevelt's New Deal farming programs. He spent the remainder of his childhood out in the cotton fields working the family plot of land. Growing up in poverty during the waning years of the Great Depression gave J.R. sympathy for the plight of working-class Americans. This would remain with him throughout his life. It was a hard life, and he soon gravitated towards music as an escape for the realities of his family's destitution. First introduced to music at church and while listening to the Grand Ole Opry singers on a battery-powered radio, he performed at school assemblies, and by age 12, he was already writing his own songs. His mother, wanting to encourage her son's talent, scraped together enough money to pay for singing lessons. But after just three lessons, his instructor, beguiled by the young man's voice, told him to cease the lessons and to never deviate from his unique, natural tone. Tragedy struck in 1944, when J.R. was 12. His older brother Jack, who had aspirations to become a preacher, was killed in a woodshop accident. The accident haunted J.R. for the rest of his life. He wrote in his autobiography later in life, "Jack was my big brother and my hero, my best friend, my big buddy, my mentor, and my protector." He said that losing his older brother had left a cold, sad place in his soul. When J.R. graduated high school in 1950, he moved to Pontiac, Michigan to work in an automobile factory for a short stint. That summer, he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force. It was at this time he changed his name to John R. Cash, with the military requiring a full first name. Stationed at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas, he soon met Vivian Liberto, the woman who would become his first wife. With the Cold War in Europe heating up, Cash was stationed in Landsberg, West Germany for the next 4 years, where he served as a radio intercept officer monitoring Soviet radio traffic. During his time in West Germany, strumming on his $5 guitar, he wrote the future classics Folsom Prison Blues and Hey Porter. Cash married Vivian upon his discharge from the armed forces in 1954. And the couple settled in Memphis, Tennessee, where Cash worked as an appliance salesman. Seeking to move his music career forward, he and two friends, Luther Perkins and Marshall Grant, started performing gospel songs at churches and on local radio. They named themselves Johnny Cash and the Tennessee Two. Grant later said in his autobiography that their frontman had a good voice, not a great one, but that there was power and presence in his voice. A man named Sam Phillips would become Cash's way into the mainstream music industry. Phillips had founded Sun Records, and their way of finding fresh talent in Memphis was to allow anyone with a few dollars to step off the street and record a song. Their motto was, "We record anything, anywhere, anytime." This had proven fruitful when in 1954, a fresh-faced young man just out of high school had walked into Sun Records to record a song for his mother. His name? Elvis Presley. After being brushed off by Phillips a couple of times, Cash finally convinced the busy record executive to give him a shot. When Phillips finally relented, Cash and his Tennessee Two played a few gospel songs for him. After listening, Phillips reportedly told Cash to go home and sin, then come back with a song he can sell. Taking this to heart, Cash returned with a few tunes to Phillips' liking, and he was won over. Sun Records released the hits Hey Porter and Cry 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 in 1955. Later that year, Cash's second single, Folsom Prison Blues, was released and it made the country top five. Johnny Cash and the Tennessee Two were fast rising stars on the country music scene, and in May of 1956, they recorded what will become their most popular song to date. I Walk the Line became a number one hit on the country Billboard charts, and even crossed over to hit the top 20 in the pop charts. Cash's style was born, and the American public loved it. This mix of country, rock and roll, blues, folk, and gospel sounds, along with his one-of-a-kind baritone vocals, was his signature throughout his career. The only real change to his style came in 1960, when W.S. Fluke Holland joined the band as drummer, which simply amplified their trademark rhythm-based music. He made the switch to Columbia Records in mid-1958, and the hits of Don't Take Your Guns to Town and Ring of Fire soon followed. Cash released his debut album in 1957, titled Johnny Cash with his Hot and Blue Guitar. This album, along with his immensely popular singles, propelled him to the top of the charts, and he quickly became a household name in Tennessee and beyond. Cash almost always wore a black suit to his shows, and this led to the nickname that would stay with him for the rest of his life, the Man in Black. But as it was with Elvis before him, with Cash's fame came his struggles with addiction. By the early 60s, Cash and his band were on the road up to 300 nights a year. He barely saw his wife and kids, whom he had relocated with to California, with his switch to Columbia Records. Cash was accompanied on many a tour by a popular singer-songwriter by the name of June Carter. She co-wrote the hit song Ring of Fire, which released in 1963 and was an instant hit. The two became close during their tours and performances together and started an affair that would eventually end Cash's marriage. Cash also tried his hand in acting around this time, starring in the film 5 Minutes to Live and a few Western TV shows. Times were good from a professional point of view, but the toll his impossible schedule had on his personal life, not to mention his health, finally caught up with him. Cash began self-medicating with prescription pills, using amphetamines and barbiturates. He used the stimulants to stay awake and perform on his hectic tour schedule, and he used the sedatives to help him come off a high so he could sleep when it was possible. He was arrested in October 1965 by the US border agents in El Paso, Texas for attempting to smuggle cheap amphetamines from Mexico. Customs found over 1,000 pills stashed in his guitar case. The image of him being led away by border agents is one of the most iconic photos of Cash, and it cemented his rebellious persona to his audience. His wife Vivian, who had become frustrated with his physical absence when he was on tour and his mental absence when he was at home, left home with their 4 daughters. She finally filed for divorce in 1966, thinking it would shock Cash out of his stupor and convince him to come home and work on their marriage. Instead, Cash simply signed the papers, and the two parted ways. From this point, Cash spiraled out of control. Now without a reason to keep himself together, his drug use only increased. He found himself in Lafayette in Walker County, Georgia in October 1967, out of his mind on prescription pills and booze. A sheriff deputy picked him up and arrested him for prowling, public intoxication, and possession of narcotics. When the deputy brought him in, Cash attempted to bribe him with a wad of $100 bills that he had shoved in his pocket. The deputy declined and threw Cash in a Lafayette cell for the night. The county sheriff, Ralph Jones, was a typical rural law enforcement officer. He was friendly to the locals, tough on dangerous criminals, and wary of out-of-towners. But he was a massive fan of the Man in Black. He had followed Cash's career and owned every single record he had ever produced, being partial to his gospel hymns. Ironically, the man whose lyrics about God's forgiveness that Sheriff Jones loved so much now sat before him a broken man in need of those very things. Cash was quite literally at the mercy of Sheriff Jones, and even as he sat in a cell nursing the mother of all hangovers, he knew it. Jones sat down with Cash, looked him in the eyes, and saw a man in need of change. He saw a man at the end of himself. He saw a man in need of a second chance. Mercy is the act of showing compassion on someone and holding back the punishment they rightly deserve. He reportedly told Cash, "Do with your life whatever you want to do. Just remember, you've got the free will to kill yourself or save your life." He then returned Cash's money and the drugs, opened the cell door, and told him he was free to leave. Cash would later credit the sheriff with helping save his life. He would go a small way to repay the debt in 1970 when he played a benefit concert in Lafayette that raised $75,000 for the local high school, over $500,000 today. Had Sheriff Jones not shown the mercy he did, one of Cash's most iconic performances may have never transpired. But given a second chance, Cash decided to take his music somewhere that was closer to home to him than a made-up stage in front of common folk. On January 13th, 1968, just a few months after his one-night stint in the slammer in Lafayette, he walked into Folsom State Prison in California. His song Folsom Prison Blues had been an enormous hit a decade earlier, and this performance was one Cash had aspired to for a long time. Prisoners had been sending him letters since the release of the song, imploring him to visit to play a few songs. He did them one better, making a deal with his record label and the prison administration to record a live record. The record, of course, is now his most famous of all. He was joined in front of the 1,000-strong inmate audience by June Carter, Carl Perkins, and the Statley Brothers. After his second song, Dark as the Dungeon, Cash slyly reminded his audience that
This show is being recorded for an album release on Columbia Records, and you can't say hell or shit or anything like that.
The performance drifted between chart toppers, mournful ballads, and upbeat tunes that had the inmates clapping and stomping their feet. The lyrics of the set chosen for the audience seemed tailor-made, encapsulating the themes of rebellion, incarceration, addiction, regret, and redemption. The act of playing at the prison was something of a pet project for Cash, though it would become the number one country album upon its release. But more than its success, he treasured the ability to give a group of men who spent their lives behind bars a brief moment of joy and release. To Cash, this was an act of mercy not too dissimilar to the one shown to him, without which he may have been just another one of those sad, empty eyes staring back at him without much of a hope or a future. His lyrics in the song Man in Black give more insight to this mindset. As a response to him always wearing black, he sang, "I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the times." One of these men Cash spoke of was a man by the name of Glenn Shirley. Shirley was himself a country songwriter and would perform for his fellow inmates at Folsom. In what is one of the many stories that speaks to the humanity of Johnny Cash, the final song in the set was a song named Greystone Chapel. Shirley had begged the prison reverend to get his demo tape in the hands of Cash a few days earlier, and as Cash announced that the final song would be one he had just heard the night before, Shirley realized he'd succeeded. As Shirley stood spellbound, Cash announced, "This song was written by our friend Glenn Shirley. Hope we do your song justice, Glenn." A few months after playing Folsom, Cash and June Carter married. He still struggled with addiction on and off again, but the long road to sobriety had begun with June at his side. He even began hosting the Johnny Cash Show in 1969, which showcased a number of contemporary music artists, but also took on social issues. Cash discussed the increasingly unpopular Vietnam War, prison reform, and even the civil rights of Native Americans. He later wrote in a letter, "I would sing more of this land, but of all God's children ain't free." June gave birth to Johnny's one and only son the following year. They named him Johnny Carter Cash. Musical success continued for Cash. His hit singles, A Thing Called Love and One Piece at a Time, kept him firmly in the limelight of country music in the 1970s. He also co-starred with Kirk Douglas in the western A Gunfight and published his popular autobiography, Man in Black, in 1975. A new decade would start with a bang for Cash when in 1980 he became the youngest living person to ever be elected to the Country Music Hall of Fame. Through the 80s and 90s, he teamed up with a number of artists. Himself, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, and Waylon Jennings formed the Highwaymen. The foursome released three albums between 1985 and 1999. Cash even recorded with U2 in the early 90s to record music that would appear on the final song of the band's album, Zooropa. Though he continued to battle moments of relapse in his addiction, Cash credited the return to the Christianity of his youth as the thing that truly saved him. That and the unconditional love of June Carter. His faith wasn't always strong, it wasn't something that was always at the forefront of his life, but it was something that was simmering in the background. Something that, in his dark night of the soul, brought clarity, repentance, and redemption. Speaking in his autobiography about one particularly hard time in his life, he said, "I was as far from God as I have ever been. My separation from him, the deepest and most ravaging of the various kinds of loneliness I'd felt over the years, seemed finally complete. It wasn't. I thought I'd left him, but he hadn't left me. I felt something very powerful start to happen to me. A sensation of utter peace, clarity, and sobriety. Later in life, he would often say to those struggling with the same things he had, "You can be redeemed." Still not done with his music yet, he recorded the album American 4, The Man Comes Around, in 2002. This album included several covers from bands such as The Beatles and Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. His rendition of Hurt is so haunting and fitting to Cash's story that some still wrongly credit the original lyrics to him. Sadly, the words of this song, "Everyone I know goes away in the end," soon hit close to home for him. In May 2003, his beloved June passed away from complications after heart surgery. Cash was beyond devastated. A friend later said, once June passed, he had the will to live long enough to record. But that was pretty much all. He recorded what would become American 5, 100 Highways, finishing it in early September of 2003. Just a week later, on September 12th, Cash died from complications from diabetes. The legacy of Johnny Cash is one of once-in-a-generation musical talent. It is a legacy of a man who saw the humanity in those people in whom it was hardest to see. And it is a legacy of someone who battled through many of life's deepest valleys and ended his life as a man who had sought after and found redemption. Redemption is the act of being brought back from the path of destruction and set on the path of freedom and righteousness. In the life of Johnny Cash, and most of all through his music, we see not just his story, but also our own. It is a story filled with joy, humor, and grace, but also one that is filled with hurt, disappointment, and many mistakes and wrong turns. Perhaps the reason why his music continues to live on 20 years after his death is because of the lesson intertwined in it, that above all, we can all be redeemed.
This episode of Virtuous Men was written and recorded by Jamie Adams and edited by Scott Einig. If you enjoyed this episode, give us a rating and leave a review in the comments section. Find us at virtuous_men on Instagram and virtuousmenpod on X. You can also watch and subscribe on YouTube at Virtuous Men Podcast. Tune in next time for episode 3, The Friendship of Andy and Red.